You are listening to The Drew Marshall Show, and you are listening to Keith McPherson playing live in studio. He's just been doing a bunch of corporate gigs in Toronto and kind enough to drop into the studio. He's the author of Making Sense of Mindfulness, Five Principles to Integrate Mindfulness Practice into Your Daily Life. Keith spent much of his life traveling the world as a professional musician. We're going to give you a little taste of that professional musicianship right stinking now.
There's a good thing start right here, darling. Here with a picture of you in my hair. You look so happy, you're smiling at me. Something inside is starting to spread. Love on, every day I'm gonna love on you. Love on, all of the ways I'm gonna love on you. For a lifetime, this is the right time. I'm gonna love on you. Without conditions, no inhibitions, I'm gonna show you from my heart. You're more than perfect, and you deserve it. I'm gonna love you the way that you are. Love on, every day I'm gonna love on you. Love on, every day I'm gonna love on you. For a lifetime, yeah, this is the right time.
Ladies and gentlemen, Keith McPherson. A little golf clap, please. A little golf clap for Keith McPherson. Keith, we were just talking about why you were here in Toronto and that moment where you walk into Chapters.
Yes.
And you see the book.
That happened this morning. It was unbelievable. I walked in. I had this gut intuition. My book had finally arrived. So I walk into Indigo Chapters at the Eaton Center, and I asked the lady, is there a book called Making Sense of Mindfulness around? She says, let me guide you to the wellness section. So I go there, she's scrolling through, and all of a sudden, there's my book. And I said, I'm the author. Could I sign a copy? And it was just the coolest thing.
Very neat.
I'm buzzing from it.
Yeah.
It was very amazing.
That's good. And the corporate thing you were speaking at, what was that again?
Yeah, I was doing some work with Good Life Fitness this week. So I did a closing keynote for their wellness summit
this
week.
Well done.
Thank you.
What would be the one thing you wanted people to walk away from your talk with?
Wow.
One thing. I know there's five principles to integrate mindfulness practice into your daily life that you talk about in your book, Making Sense of Mindfulness. See what I did there, Tim?
You're awesome.
Thank you. But just one thing that you left the Good Life people with.
Absolutely. Well, it's always my intention to get people out of their busy brain and to start listening to the spirit internally, that intuition that speaks to us. So if I did that even to one person or help one person connect to that place, it was a success.
How do you know that you've hit it?
Well, I usually get a lot of Instagram and emails after a talk.
Right.
And I hear feedback from people that have connected. And they, you know, all these different stories of connection. And to me, that's a sign that it's, you know, resonating.
Yeah, those are not the same emails that I get.
Really? Let's hear some.
What
kind of emails do you get?
I know. We've already gone over it before. I love getting negative comments because it just kills me. I love talking about it on the show. I wish I cared more. Okay, mindfulness. Who was the guy I was trying to get on the show? I forgot his name.
John Kabat-Zinn.
So I was driving along listening to the Oprah series, the Super Soul stuff, and I heard this guy and I went, whoa, this guy's good. I'm not into your scene, right? So you knew this guy way before I knew this guy, and I was listening to this guy and went, I need this guy in the show. So we've reached out to him. We're going to try to make this happen. Try to make it happen today. Sorry, it didn't happen.
That's okay. It's
but fantastic. As I was listening to him, I know I'm going to explain this like a dope, but that's my spiritual gift. Mindfulness. It's kind of like, it's like stop, drop, and roll. What? Come on. Just bear with me for a second. So stop, drop in, and then let whatever is distracting you roll away.
Absolutely. I love that way of saying it. That's perfect.
Thank you.
Absolutely. When's your book coming
out? Can I get a corporate speaking gig too?
Thank you. You know, everybody, Drew Marshall is up for hire.
No, but really, it's the whole, okay, hold on a second. There's so much stuff going on in my brain right now. I remember driving around Cyprus, and I remember just pulling over and just looking out at the ocean and doing that stop, drop, and roll. And then I finally went, that's the ocean.
Yes.
Rather than, hey, that's the ocean. Slight delineation, but a huge difference in the corpuscles.
Absolutely, yeah. I first had this happen when I was on Canadian Idol, and I was a finalist on there. It was season 4. And
was that Shane Weeb's year?
I don't know.
Shane Weeb? Was Lionel Richie part of that one?
Lionel Richie?
No, okay.
I don't think he was.
Okay, anyway, sorry,
He was dancing on the ceiling.
with his moon boots, yeah.
Put him check. I actually, I was in season 4, and it was the top 22, and I got to work with this amazing vocal coach. And I was a little nervous. There was like always cameras rolling and my mind was just going crazy. And I walked into the first rehearsal with this amazing vocal coach, Deborah Bird. And my mind was just racing and the music started to play and I started singing. And in between every line of the song, I caught myself speaking. Is this right? Am I doing okay? Is this the right word? So about 30 seconds in, Deb just says, Keith, pause, stop. And she looks at me, she says, just breathe. And we take 3 breaths together. And at the end of it, she holds my hand and she says, now sing. And I have to tell you, it's a similar thing to what you saw in the ocean. All of a sudden, the music started,
yeah.
And it wasn't just me going through the motions of singing lyrics. The emotional connection happened, and I felt myself tearing up, and I felt the room expanding, and that's the power of this practice.
Okay, first of all, sorry, my mind goes all sorts of different places. I want to clarify it ever because I know I've got someone listening who's going to chastise me about this later. Cyprus is not surrounded by an ocean. It's surrounded by sea. It's Mediterranean. Just want to clear that up to the one person I know who's listening who's going to be bothered about that. Secondly, what is so hard to understand about mindfulness?
Well, it's a serious buzzword. When I was working on the book, I asked a lot of people, what does mindfulness mean to you? And there was so many answers from stop, drop, and roll to isn't that practice where you sit on a meditation cushion and taste raisins? Like, why would I ever do that?
Raisins.
I know. I couldn't believe it. But there's actually a practice in one of the MBSR trainings where everybody gets a raisin and you slow down and you taste it and you smell it and it's quite intriguing. We won't do that today on the show. But there is
next week when Chapman's ice cream is here in studio.
There is an aspect of mindfulness of where you're slowing down, and that was a big one too. Isn't mindfulness doing nothing? And there's so much resistance to that. Well, why would I do nothing? I don't have time to do nothing. And so what I've found is there's a lot of misconceptions about what the word means and how to integrate it.
Yeah.
But really what I've come to find is mindfulness practice isn't something very tangible that you're going to add on your to-do list. It's just not, you know. It's not a prescription for doing more. It's a prescription of, in the moment, right now, how am I being? Like, being intentional. How am I being right now as we're having this conversation? And all day long, as I'm doing what I'm doing, how am I showing up in the present moment?
Okay, why is there seems to be a correlation between people who are in the yoga world and the mindfulness world, that whole tribe of people, so many of them seem to be so anxious and wound up naturally.
Yes.
They're just, like, they have to do this stuff in order to survive.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So what is that? Is it just, you know, first of all, there's a bunch of anxious people trying not to be anxious, so they look for things to help them not be anxious, and that's why they're in the yoga mindfulness scene.
Yeah.
Like, which came first?
Well, let's talk about anxiety for a minute.
Okay.
I mean, it definitely the yogis, there's a lot of people that come to yoga that are dealing with that. But, you know, the stats are like 1 in every 5 of us is battling some form of anxiety. I think it's actually lower. It's like 1 out of every 3 right now. And, you know, when you think about it, we're living in a time where we're bombarded. Just the digital technology, for example, that's telling us who to be friends with, what to eat, what to think, what to wear, what to buy, how many steps did I take today, am I getting enough sleep at night?
Yeah.
We're bombarded by all of this pressure coming at us, and there's this pressure to speed up and do more and get more and be more, and I think that has a real effect on our physical body. We're all walking around with tight chests, and a lot of us are up at night, you know, worrying about what's coming next. Am I going to be all right? Is there going to be enough money? Am I going to be able to keep up?
Okay, so my real question is, are you into this because you're a wound-up dude? Are you naturally a wound-up psychopath?
You know, because this is the first time on the show, so this is the pre-screening. Okay, I wouldn't say I'm a wound-up psychopath.
No, but do you have a weirdness about you?
I think that we all are dealing with this right now. So
what's your thing, though?
What's my?
Yeah, where do you get your anxiety from? Where is the wound-upness? I'm so good at this radio thing. Where does that come from in your life?
Well, it comes from this little stick character in my head that tells me that I'm not doing well, I'm failing.
You're not enough.
I'm not enough. And it's been ingrained since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it's playing out. So at the very base of it all, I think for myself, there's a fear that I'm going to fail, or it's not going to go well, or I'm not doing a good enough job. And that's at the root of it.
Okay. So there is a scripture. Tim, get ready. I'm about to say there is a scripture. Which I don't really say that often. But is there not a scripture? Actually, that's probably a better way to say it. Yeah. That says something like, do not be anxious. Don't worry. It's not going to add a single day to your life. What's the point?
Right.
Right? So cognitively, we understand the silliness of anxiety or worry or stress. We get it. It's like, there's no point. It doesn't help me at all.
Yeah.
But yet we continue and continue and continue to worry and be stressed about things.
Absolutely. I mean, the acronym you hear a lot is false evidence appearing real, fear. False evidence appearing real. Mm-hmm. And they've done studies at Harvard about this. They've tracked people through the span of time where they said, write down your fears and let's see what happens. And the large majority of those people came out on the other end and reported what they were worrying about didn't actually even show up and happen. And that small margin that did reported it actually wasn't as scary as I thought it was going to be. So we spent all of this time and energy in this place of fear mode. And so actually, in the book, one of the principles is all about this. It's what I call expose the saboteur. Start becoming aware of when you're in fear mode and naming it. Because if you don't name it, it takes you over and you become stuck like a flea in a jar.
Stuck like a flea in the jar.
Yeah, they've done experiments.
It's like a Willie Nelson song.
It's crazy.
I want to just drop the principles here, and then I'm going to hand the book over to Amy the intern, who's going to hold it up in front of our Facebook Live camera. Here's the principle number one. Everything begins as an inner dream. Principle number two, expose the saboteur. Oh, I think I just heard about that.
Yep.
Principle three, did I say three already? Open your mind. And that's where the Jesus people freak out, right? Because there's a whole lot of things about, whoa, don't be opening your mind up. Because when you open up the floodgates, other stuff can come in that you don't necessarily want in there. You should be having a spirit of self-control as well.
Yeah.
Principle four, live mindfully aware. And principle five, I am. Now, that's a trigger phrase for the Judeo-Christian scene, because the I am, that's the God thing.
I am that I am.
Wasn't that Popeye that said that? No. Can you, Amy, take that and... hold that up in front of the camera, please. There's the book, kids. What's it called again?
Making Sense of Mindfulness.
All right. So, where are we going to go first? Because there was a couple of triggers there on that one. What was the first one? Oh, yeah, opening the mind.
Opening the mind.
Yeah. Should you have any kind of protection as to what goes into the mind? When you say open the mind, empty the mind, right? That's different than emptying the mind. Dude, I'm so confused.
Well, telling your mind to be empty or to stop working is like telling your heart to stop beating. I think our mind is such a powerful thing, and it's part of who we are. But I think a lot of us get very caught up in the mind, and the conscious mind in particular. So this idea of opening your mind, I first heard this from one of my teachers and mentors, Dr. Wayne Dyer. Are you familiar with Wayne?
Yeah.
His work.
And when did he pass?
He passed in, I believe it was 2012.
Yeah, not too long ago. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, speaking of that, like every time I worked with him or I'd see him, he would always have this idea of like, open your mind, be open. And, you know, I think that fear mode can creep in really quickly, as you were suggesting, where it's like, oh, open your mind. Like, you know, evil is going to come in. But I think it was misunderstood.
Yeah,
because this idea of opening your mind, in the context of mindfulness, we're talking, at least in this framework, about really having the conscious mind, the part of us that's making decisions, that analytical part.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we think over 60,000 thoughts a day up there. It's like
Tim, a little less.
It's like learning how to. Tim, how many thoughts do you think a day?
Let's drop that down a little.
Three.
3 thoughts a day. Yeah, it's...
Sorry, keep going.
Well, we spend so much time up in this conscious mind, and we think it's who we are. But when I say open the mind, there's actually more to us than just our thinking conscious mind. Right. There's this part called the unconscious mind. And we all have it. The unconscious mind, just a couple things fascinating about this. It's the part of us that holds all our memory. If I were to say, Drew, right now, close your eyes and remember the last time you had a good belly laugh. And for your listeners, same thing. Just notice, as soon as you start thinking about belly laughing, you start feeling the energy of it. It changes your physiology. It's your memory. And as soon as you remember, the body is affected. Some people say our physical body is the unconscious mind because it holds all of our memory. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, totally.
Like that part of us that's remembering.
But the subconscious mind remembers everything it sees, everything it hears, and treats it as truth. So right. How does that differ?
Very literal.
Yeah, how does that differ from the unconscious mind?
Yes.
The subconscious mind and the unconscious mind.
To me, there's no difference. I think that's just different ways of explaining the same thing.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But to open your mind to me is to tap into that unconscious mind place beyond the overthinking, overanalytical. Because when we tap into the unconscious, which is hosting our memory, running our body, it's remembering to beat our heart, grow our fingernails. It also, as you said, it's very literal. It takes things at face value. So if I'm thinking thoughts about life is hard, or you wake up in the morning, I'm so exhausted, the unconscious mind takes this literally. They've got a direct relationship between each other, the mind and the unconscious. And so when you're thinking these thoughts of beating yourself up, the unconscious remembers, and all of a sudden we find ourselves totally out of balance and stressed out and anxious. So to open your mind is to actually get these two parts of yourself into relationship with each other. It's to teach the conscious mind, the thinking part of you, how to become a listener, how to start listening. What am I feeling? What's my intuition speaking right now?
But okay.
Got a gut feeling.
Oh, dude, here we go.
All right, bring it on.
First of all, hold on. Let me just reintroduce you again. Keith McPherson, not Fearson.
No fear.
Is it Fearson or Fearson? It's Fearson,
Keith,
right?
No Fearson, so it's McPherson.
Oh, my goodness. Author of Making Sense of Mindfulness, 5 Principles to Integrate Mindfulness Practice into Your Daily Life. His website is Keith McPherson. That's P-H-E-R-S-O-N. Mac, P-H-E-R-S-O-N.ca, which means he's Canadian, eh? Where are you from? You a Winnipeg guy or something?
I'm from Winnipeg. Some people call it Winterpeg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, what was I going to ask? So, do we not spend too much stinking time thinking about ourselves? Like, this mindfulness thing that you do, that sounds like a slag, but just stay with the point here for a second. You're not going to get many speaking dates in Rwanda. You're not going to get many speaking dates in the Sudan because they're just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. In North America, we are beyond surviving. We are apathetic and narcissistic, and that's my favorite word, navel gazers, right? All that. So do we not just spend way too much time thinking about ourselves?
We do. I saw that firsthand. One of the people I handed out a ticket to Canadian Idol to back in the day was Craig Kielberger from Free the Children. And Craig became a fan of my music, and he invited me over to Kenya to work on some projects there. And I have to say, Drew, it was the first time in my life that I saw what it means to live in poverty, like in that form of it. And I'd walk around in the Maasai Mara in this local market, and people were bartering for used clothing, food going bad. And what blew me away is that despite all of that, you know, lack of materialism and people that are completely impoverished, they were gathered around in the streets, and they'd be singing, and they'd be celebrating. And I was so blown away by it. I actually brought my guitar into the market one weekend. I thought, I'm going to jam with these people. So I pull my guitar up. I get this little intuition. They don't speak English. They speak Swahili. And so I'm like, what am I going to play? My intuition goes, play a Bryan Adams song. So
really?
I'm serious.
Are you sure that was your intuition?
I think so. So I started playing Everything I Do It For You. And all of a sudden, the crowd quadrupled in size, and these guys said, what's your name? And just jokingly, I said, my name's Brian. They said, you're Brian Adams? And I'm serious. And then all of a sudden, at the end of this jam, this guy comes up to me, and he says, this is a very strange request, but I'm a volunteer here as well, and I've been watching you play and have this little jam, and I own a company back where I live. And next week, we're having a party for our staff, and we've been looking for musical entertainment.
Shut up.
He goes, I'm wondering if I could fly you to where I live, and you could play. Now, you got to remember, I'm in the middle of Africa, so this is kind of dodgy to get on a plane with a stranger.
Yeah.
I thought, it's a good way to go out if I die.
Sure.
So I did. I got on a plane. I flew 5 hours away, and I landed in Dubai, one of the wealthiest places I've ever been.
Wow.
And, you know, when you were talking about imbalance of, well, my gosh, like,
yeah.
I get to Dubai and it's just like skyscrapers and all-you-can-eat buffets and fake downhill ski slopes. And you know what I came back to? I played the same music in both places. It's for some of the poorest people I've ever met in terms of materialism and some of the wealthiest in Dubai. And it didn't matter whether you were rich, poor, different skin color. The music came on and we were connected.
Yeah.
It was like the same reaction from the songs. And this, to me, is really one of the entryways to this practice. It's the foundation of mindfulness. All things are connected.
Dude, I think music is lubrication for the soul.
I love that. Absolutely.
It is the thing that allows good stuff to slip in.
Absolutely.
This is just sounding weird now. Okay, that was the fastest half hour of this entire show. That just flew by. You are a captivating communicator. You're
Thank
a great
you.
Communicator.
Thank you.
You're a really stinking good musician. It bothers me how much talent you have in so many different areas. You should share. Like, there's no one person should be as gifted as you are.
Wow.
So I don't like you.
Mahalo, thank you.
What'd you call me?
I said mahalo.
Oh, okay.
Like the Hawaiians would say, mahalo, Drew. Thank you.
He's calling you hollow.
Yeah, I was
mahalo.
I want to get that book back again, Amy the Intern. Can you pass that back, please? Thank you so much. Kids, the name of the book again is Making Sense of Mindfulness, Five Principles to Integrate Mindfulness Practice in Your Daily Life by Keith McPherson. He's live in studio. He's about to go out playing one more song. And the CD, where is that CD? It was around here too somewhere. Let's get that back into my hand so I can shine. Oh, that's good. Oh, I love the artwork.
Did you
do that? Of
very,
course you did.
Very good friend of mine, Roberta Landreth, from related to the Landreth brothers, if you know them.
Yeah.
Did the
Steve.
Artwork. Yes.
Oh, okay. So factors in there. So again, look at you. Oh, you got another website, dude. KeithMcPhersonMusic.com. Dude, you're just... Sorry, I'm just now reading the liner notes here. It's great radio when the host starts reading, you know, to himself. Okay. You can get this book all over the place, including chapters where he just saw it himself for the first time today, Keith McPherson. And if you want to bring someone to rock your people's world and get them to process things that they need to process, maybe to have your business be a little bit more profitable, it's so interesting how you can say, well, hold on, mindfulness and profit, you know, isn't that counterintuitive? Go against each other. But no, if you are in the good headspace you need to be in, then productivity will change as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's true.
And I love how many stinking chapters there are in this, which means they're short chapters. So good for my brain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Squirrel. All right, what song are you going out with, man?
I'm
going
to go out with the title track from the record. It's called Shine. And I wrote this for my friend's daughter, this 14-year-old girl who, as I was finishing up the writing of the book, she called her dad on FaceTime. I was out at the cabin with him. And she called, and I was overhearing their conversation while I was working on my book in the other room. And she was just beating herself up. She had just broken up with her boyfriend. She said, I feel fat. I feel ugly. Why'd you even bring me onto the planet? Like, why am I here? And my heart was breaking as I was hearing this. And I was writing all about the power of the words I am. And so I decided I'd write her higher self, her spirit, a letter. And a week later, this song emerged. And so I believe it's for her and for all of you that are listening right now.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Again, live on The Drew Marshall Show, Mr. Keith McPherson.
There's a famous constellation hiding above the clouds. There's a man on the moon, you can't see him there, but you know he's looking down. When you're lost and feeling empty, like a stranger in the dark, somewhere deep inside of you is a radiant spark. You're a diamond, supernova. You're all the things your father told you. Underneath it, can you see it? You've got to let it shine. It's a shockwave to the system, and courage to carry it out. But in the dead of the night, the glow of your light is what illuminates the ground. So come on, take a chance and burn brighter than the stars. You're a stellar light exploding so much to who you are. You're a diamond, supernova. You are all the things your father told you. Underneath it, can you see it? You've got to let it shine. So live it right to the end, 'cause you deserve the utmost happiness. You're a diamond, supernova. You're all the things your father told you. Underneath it, can you see it? You've got to let it shine. So you got to let it shine.
Well done, well done, big guy, well done. Keith McPherson on the Drew Marshall Show. Thank you. I know it was a hustle to get here, and I know that you're probably exhausted from all that you've been doing this weekend, but thanks for coming in, man. Oh. Really, really, really good to have you.
Total honor to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, ooh, still got the verb on. Love that. You sound like Darth Vader.